Nobody else does this, and it's just so much easier. Like, all the paper, I would have to bring all of this. We would have to print out those things to everybody.
I mean, just to
That's
save.
a, her two packets that she sent were 49 pages or something.
I know
on
when
top
we
of
first
Doug's
start. Well, when
valuation.
I first started, I was getting packets like that thick.
Yeah, I mean, if these are,
I still have them.
These are
because they are
documents.
Public record, and
yeah, these two.
I'm sure you guys have a copy, but I figure it's safer to have it.
Yeah, it's so much easier to do it this way. I'm very glad that we did this. We started this just when I got started, too. Is that, did I get lucky? Literally 2 years
yeah.
ago. This is my 2-year anniversary.
It's surprising to me as we hire new people outside the, of governmental entities that. You know, we hired people from third-party entities that didn't have to do the Sunshine Law. You try to explain the Sunshine Law to them, and they're like, well, I don't understand. Why do I have to keep my Post-it? Because the Sunshine Law says you got to provide that if somebody asks for it. And it's surprising to me. The first thought to them is, why do you need all this paper? And they want to start bundling up and just throw it out. And it's like, no, 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 you've got to record that. The sheet's like 32 by 24, but you got to record that. You got to dispose of it properly. You can't just throw it out like third party. Which brings up, you know, as we go into the digital age, are they looking at changing the Sunshine Laws? Because, I mean, you'd almost have to expand it in order to cover all the...
Yeah, there was, when I was acting city manager, there was a request that came through of any text messages that went back and forth between certain individuals within the city on my personal phone.
Yeah. It also brings up, like, ChatGPT and things like that, because technically it's not an employee, so an employee using those, it's kind of like a... Like, how does the state look at that for Sunshine Law recording? Like, if I hand that out to somebody, yeah, I could see that becoming a Sunshine Law, something that I'd have to keep a copy of. But, yeah, I mean, just the way we're going
AI
with the digital age.
A lot of things.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You can get it to make songs for you. You put in there that I'd like you to create a song from Mama Got Ran Over by a Reindeer, but based on city council budgeting analysis. And it comes up with like funny little things about city council couldn't do the budget this year. You know, all sorts of stuff. It was so cute.
Oh, my gosh.
That AI, man, it's fun. Yes, I use it for work too, but sometimes you need a break. Hello, we're just talking about AI. If you are not the host, please press the star key. We will now connect you to your call. There are 1 attendees of this conference. Your host has joined.
Hey, Doug, you there?
Hey, Charlie, good morning.
Morning. You're on speakerphone, but I don't have us all set up yet. I'm just getting a microphone, so give us 2 minutes, and we'll be getting rolling.
Not a problem.
Yep, no problem.
Got a little bit of a...
Oop.
Whoops.
Oh, now you've done
Take
it.
Take it out of my paycheck, I guess. Oh, wait, they don't pay me.
Oh, shoot.
Put that on the next agenda item, a trusty
oh,
raise.
See that little tab?
10% of
yeah.
0.
1%
is...
of 0, 10% of 0.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or we have another way of saying it, but yeah.
See which hand fills up first?
Yeah.
Anybody got a black magic marker?
Yeah.
Boy, but for that kind of money, you'd figure it would have held up a little bit better.
Well, look, I hate to say it, but it's even loose. I hope they got these at Ollie's.
Mine's the same way. One of them.
I mean, these aren't exactly nice chairs for the bigger individual, and
I hope,
you know, you got a couple of city council. But
I hope they got them at Ollie's and didn't spend a lot.
Black magic marker, I'm telling you. No one will
know. That's it. You got one handy?
No, I don't.
Uh-oh.
I got a lot of stuff in my bag, but not that.
Whatever that I can have
I had not just to go over. Oh my gosh.
You got to buy the bulbs. I highly recommend the Home Depot bulbs. They're the HUD space bulbs because those you can connect them to your Google. And I have a Nest app, the Nest that sits out for my clock.
By the way, we're live recording.
I do the, I try to tab the.
If I'm home, I can turn off all my lights.
To make sure.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to go places and not want to get up.
It is very hard for me not to sit somewhere and be like, hey, Google.
I told my daughter, I visited my daughter. I am offended that the toilet system does not rise when I come into the rest of your house.
Okay, Doug, do we got you? Still there?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Yep.
Can you hear Doug well enough?
I can hear him.
Yeah, I can hear him. Yes.
Hey, Doug.
Morning.
I just wanted to make sure you can hear me.
Yes. Coming through loud and clear.
Okay, we're ready. We can go ahead and set this meeting.
Okay.
We will call to order the General Employees Pension Board quarterly meeting Monday, March 9th, 2026 at 10:10.
We still have a quorum.
Do we need to roll call again? Okay. Item number two is public comments. Being there's none, we'll move on to item number three, the approval of the December 8th, 2025 quarterly meeting minutes. Are there any changes or concerns there? Okay, I'll look for a motion.
Make a motion to approve the December 8th meeting minutes.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Moving on to item number four, reports. First up is Doug Lozen from Foster and Foster.
You're up, Doug.
Okay. I'm very sorry. I don't get to see my friends at Edgewater this morning, so I really appreciate you letting me do this by phone once.
Page five of the tablet.
I am here to present the October 1st, 2025 valuation. I'll make it very brief. There's just not a whole lot of moving parts. Very little change from the prior year. Troy, I understand the reports are on the tablets, correct?
Yes, they are. And your summary is page nine, if that's where you're going to start.
Perfect. Yes, you read my mind. On the summary page, I'll remind the trustees of the amount that you approved last year, not 1 year ago, the October 1st, 2024 valuation. But the amount the city owes for the current fiscal year, 25-26, and that is $1,008,000. Now, I am driving, so I didn't memorize. That's as far as I memorized, but I believe it's $1,008,000 for this year and some change. And budgeting for 26-27, you just look at the left-hand column, and I believe it's $1,061,000 and maybe $600, something like that.
Pretty good.
Yes. A little bit of an increase, not a lot. Now, I know that's subjective. If the city sees, $53,000 increase, maybe they have a different opinion, but I call it kind of modest compared to the baseline. Most of that increase is because of your four-year smoothing asset return, and you're all very well aware that we do use a four-year average. The market returns for three of the last four have been very good, exceeding your assumption. However, we're still holding on to 2022 for one last year. So the smooth is a little north of 4%. That's most of the reason for the increase. The other part is the inactive mortality experience. I don't believe anybody passed away, which I'm very happy with. And then we changed the mortality assumption. I presented those results two meetings ago. That had a minor increase. I think that was $5,000 per year. So, again, most of the increase, the $53,000 or so, is because of the four-year smoothing. I'm hopeful that when I'm there next year at this time, I'll have a different answer for you, just because we're dropping off the 2022 year from the average. And my thought is maybe the city's contribution perhaps might go down a bit when I'm there next year at this time, but we'll just have to wait and find out. The final update I'll give the trustees is that your funded status remains virtually unchanged. To the nearest percentage, it's 66%. So that is the update. I'm happy to answer questions or go into more detail.
Any questions from the board?
I don't
have none.
Appreciate it, Doug. Thank you very much. Oh, also, we're going to get a motion first, and then we'll also do the declaration of returns. Sorry. do I have no other questions for Doug? I got a motion to approve the October 1st, 2025 valuation as presented.
I'll make a motion that we approve the October 1st actuarial valuation as presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes 5-0.
And then, Doug, do you want to cover the Declaration of Returns or Bonnie?
Maybe someone in the room, just because my connection's a little bit glitchy.
Bonnie's got it for you. Set the Declaration of Returns at 6.25%.
I'll make a motion that we set the Declaration of Returns at 6.25%.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed 5-0.
Excellent. Okay, Doug, I think we're good. Anything else for the board?
All right, sounds good. I hope to see everybody very soon. Take care of yourselves.
All right, thank you, Doug. Right,
thank you.
Drive safe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Next is Frank
Lord. Awesome. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So maybe a quick follow-up to Doug's report as we migrate into mine. So based on the actuarial value of assets, you know, the actuary's math is a little different, and they have your plan at roughly $12 million in change. The good news is, you know, at the end of our fourth quarter, your plan stood at $13.1 million in actual kind of day-to-day how you and I would account for monies, right? So that what does that mean? That means you actually have about $1 million built in. Hopefully it'll be recognized over the future, so long as nothing terrible happens in the near term. Obviously, we're sitting here talking about a lot of market volatility, so let's keep our fingers crossed that we can get through a 9:30 relatively unscathed.
Frank, do you want to start with the market overview or the quarterly report?
I'll just do it in kind of chronological order. So on your tablets, if you could flip over to page 45 of 102. And it should be a green versus black line and a blue line on the left. And then that gray and green on the right of that slide. So for the last couple of years, we've spent a lot of time talking about that line on the right. And that line is what keeps me up at night, because when the stock market is driven by so few companies or so few stocks, that is troublesome. So if we think about this escalation of that gray line, what it says is within the S&P 500 index, so the topest, the largest 500 companies in the U.S., top 10 companies accounts for nearly 41% of that weight. So whatever happens to NVIDIA, whatever happens to Amazon or Microsoft could have a substantial impact because they have such a big weight of part of the index. So over the last couple of quarters, we've actually rebalanced away from our growth positions where this line is typically held. And we added a little bit more into that international. We also rebalanced away from the same areas, the S&P 500, we rebalanced to bonds, just because we saw elevated risk kind of within the same idea of time frame. So I'm going to lead your attention then to page 52 out of 102. And I'm happy to report that your board's decisions have been critically perfect, right? So in this case, if you look at page 52, and focus on that box, 9 boxes on the left, right? And what you'll see is that since our last meeting, so 3 months ago, the large cap growth companies, which again includes the NVIDIAs and the Apples and Googles of the world, are actually down. They're negative by a large margin, right? So year to date, they may be even further because this is as of February 10th. So you can see the good news here, right, is that the monies that used to concentrate so little or so concentrated in the so fewer names, right, in the top 10 securities, are now actually being dispersed everywhere else. It's not like investors chose money out of here and put in one of the eight boxes, right? But instead, if you look at this box, while the large cap growth is down 5.4, everything else is up pretty significantly. And that's exactly what we want in a healthy stock market, is that instead of 10 companies driving the entire market, it should be the 490 companies that drives the entire market, if not more. And what this illustrates is that this is what we're hoping for in order to see the stock market moves further. Because if you only have 10 companies going up and rest of the market stays here, that is not sustainable. We're due for just a large correction. But if you have the entire market going up, right, that means you don't need to shift money out of just five stocks hand into elsewhere. Now you have to shift money out of 490 stocks in order for the market to fall pretty precipitously, right? So this actually is a healthy sign for our overall market. So year to date, as a plan, you're actually being rewarded for being more diversified than you were in the last 2 years. Last 2 years, the key theme was to bet on the AI, bet on the Mag 7s. Now, the key theme is to remain diversified. And again, your diversification has actually paid off. So again, a little bit of good news. The second part of the good news I'll share with you is that because we have recognized that large cap growth being critically overpriced, we actually have what we call a value bias in the portfolio. So you have in a large cap two managers. You have the Vanguard Growth on the growth side. And you also have the Virtus or Ceridex Value. So if you look at our dollar positioning going into this quarter that we're in, we actually had an overweight in the value sectors. So if we think about value managed by your investment manager, Ceridex, they're actually up this year versus all the other large cap components that are down. So far, the Ceridex portfolio is up about 2.5% this year relative to the growth sector being down as much as 10% as we speak. So again, where we are tilted, it is benefiting the plan a little bit more, and we're going to spend a little bit more time on that. But further, what you'll note is that we're finding some excitement out of real estate. If you go back out of page 51, this is an area that we're talking about. We have talked about for the past couple quarters. In the last meeting, I believe we rescinded the idea of getting our redemptions. Right? Remember, the problem with real estate we have is that, you know, when we ask for money, even though they advertise this fund to be open-ended, meaning that we could get in and get out on a quarterly basis, but that money is only available to us if they sell properties. So if they don't sell anything, there's no cash available for us. And that's really the dilemma that we've been in for the last, call it, 2 years. Since July of 2022, right, we have recommended that we reduce our position in real estate. They were able to give us trickles of money back at a time. But at the last meeting, because we saw this really kind of an inversion for real estate, meaning that we saw property prices tick up for the first time. And what is noted here are the orange bars, right? So what we own are our type of real estate that's called core open-end real estate. Core means that they're the highest class of commercial properties, typically over 90% occupied. So if you think about what does that mean for you as the landlord or the owners of these properties, is that as you have 90% occupied properties, you're going to consistently get your income. And that's the gray bar. But what you don't know is how much your building is worth from quarter to quarter. It could go down, it could go back up. And that's really just the cyclical nature of how real estate markets are priced. But if you kind of look at what has happened post-COVID, those orange bars are now reaching an inflection point. And for the first time in the fourth quarter of last year, that we saw the orange bar positive. And this, if it's anything like the past, right, real estate gets marked up very slowly. And if you just look at all these years past, they tend to go down slowly, but they tend to go up slowly. So I think over the next year, we will find a good reentry point into real estate and potentially reallocate towards real estate. And I think having a potentially lower interest rate environment will certainly help real estate prices as well. I believe the mortgage rates hit a 3-year low just in the last week. I silly as that sounds, but mortgages were averaging about 7 to 8% for a long time. And suddenly, just in the last week, because of all the fears out there, they've actually come down below 6%. So again, thinking about the idea of rates falling and people potentially will buy real estate. Likewise, exact same for commercial real estate, because the cost to borrow is falling as well. So it means transaction is likely to pick up. So again, as we think about real estate, you know, it has been a great diversifier for your portfolio. But now, right, as we're looking to de-risk more of your assets, then we could potentially find an entry point back into real estate. Any questions so far?
How much are you talking about putting back into real estate?
Yeah, so we have a relative underweight as we speak, right? So our target in this portfolio is as high as 10%, right? So it would be, call it somewhere between 500,000 to a million max, but no more than that. Okay. Your assets stand at $13 million, so 10% of that is, call it, you know, $1.3 million. And right now you have just over 500,000. Let's take a look at your positioning now, actually. If you don't mind, bear with me and go to page 63 out of 102. So let's just kind of do some simple math here. So your real estate exposure on that page under the percent actual column, it's 7.5%, right? So if you were to add, let's call it $300,000, then that would be close to the $1 million mark. So I overspoke. I thought you had 500,000, but you have a million. So again, in this case, we would push you potentially up to the 10% target, but not too far above that. Real estate, you know, again, because what we've learned is that they're not as liquid and your plan actually requires a lot of cash, right? So we don't ever want to jeopardize our ability to raise monies in something that's potentially a little bit illiquid, right? So we never want to put more than that 10% threshold in that bucket. But across the, let's just jump ahead and talk about the benefits of real estate and potentially what we can see is, let's go to page 66 out of 102. So 66 out of 102 there. And if you scan towards the bottom section of that page and just go across the line that says ARA or American Realty Advisors Real Estate and go to the 5-year column, which is the most right column, you'll see that the real estate average return 3.6 per year over the last 5 years. And that's certainly better bonds where the money came from. Bonds during the same time frame only produced a rate of return of 0.4%. But conversely, as we have seen rates being cut over the last year and a half or so, you can see that bonds, right, has actually produced a decent rate of return over the last 3 years, 5.2%, and over the last year, a rate of return of 7.7%. Does everyone see that? Remember when I said the analogy that if we are investing in similar kind of assets, meaning that if we're buying less risk in bonds and taking more risk in real estate, then we demand at least 2 extra percent. So that's the environment that we see is now real estate is going to potentially give you that extra 2% rate of return, whereas bonds may be taking a slight pause. We enter this year with the expectation that we're going to get at least 2 to 3 cuts. And at the moment, rate cuts are off the table for this month, even though we were supposed to get our first cut this month, right? So again, we don't know what the direction of real estate is going to go. But again, what we can hope for is that you as investors are compensated to get that extra 2% in addition to what bonds could do this year. Okay, and bonds have had a tailwind and they could continue to have tailwind, but the tailwind is certainly slowing in terms of what the bond, you know, expected rate of returns are. And then further, let's go back to the top of the page. You know, as I alluded to, if you start on the domestic equity portions of the slide, we currently have about 49% of our assets in domestic equity. And if you look at the Virtus versus the Vanguard weight, you can see that the Virtus has roughly $474,000 compared to the Vanguard growth at 276. And this is what I meant by the overweight. We have a slightly higher balance in the value-oriented manager than we do with the Vanguard growth portfolios. So again, as we enter this year, and that should help, but it doesn't shelter you from the broader market volatilities. But the growth side under Virtus at least is positive so far through this kind of a geopolitical war that we're in as we speak. And then, you know, we did rebalance a little bit back into international last year, as I talked about. International is interesting, right? Because, you know, if we think about American funds, Euro Pacific, it has roughly 450 stocks in the portfolio. And the reason it underperformed last year, even though I underperformed, you know, by earning 30%, it still underdelivered our goals or expectations. And that is due to the fact that they had a smaller allocation to China. So the benchmark has about an 8% allocation to China, and Euro Pacific had about a 4% allocation to China. Remember last year, as we were raising the tariff war and trade war with China, we actually thought the Chinese economy was slow, but little did we know that the Chinese AI stocks kind of went up at the same time as American AI stocks. So their stock market didn't hurt. But this is a year where China is actually pulling back pretty substantially. So just as our AI stocks pulling back, the Chinese AI stocks are also pulling back pretty significantly. So again, we have no problems with them underperforming, especially at a tune of earning 30% for your plan. But I will make a note to say that at that 30% return that was produced in our international fund, about 50% of that came by way of currency. Our dollar fell, right? All other currencies went up. So that 50% of that 30%, call it 15% of the returns we achieve, really was just speculative earnings by way of the U.S. dollar falling and other currencies going up. Now, interestingly enough, dollar is going back up. So we'll see a little reversion to the mean, because now as the world is kind of in a scrambling mode as we speak, right, people are piling into the safest assets, and that happens to be dollar and U.S. treasuries. So again, dollar is going back up because it's attracting monies back. So it's one of those hard things to predict when the dollar will be up or down. And that's why I said, hey, we can never bet against the dollar at the last meeting. And that's exactly the case. We just don't know when the dollar would go back up again. So again, no real issues here with our international fund, because it serves as a diversifier for this portfolio. And then lastly, maybe just to talk about the current risk that we have at hand. Unfortunately, I don't know if there's too much that we could do about what's happening. All this came about very quickly and very aggressively. And, you know, we did have Iran name, you know, the new supreme leader, which is Khamenei's son. So I don't know if that's good news or the bad news. We were hoping for a bit of a revolution in Iran, but we didn't get that over the last week. So this war could be prolonged more than we think. And the attitude from Iran is that, well, we are going to retaliate. I just don't know to what degree they're going to do that. Maybe it's political rhetorics. We're not. But I do know that all the nearby allies are feeling a little bit of this. You know, Dubai is a popular place for billionaires, and the airport is down. And one of the one of the infrastructure, I think a utility plant, is actually hit as well. Right. So, again, it is impacting a lot of the neighboring U.S. ally countries out there. So, again, to what degree will they have enough missiles to be able to attack? And to what degree did we damage a lot of their underground missile and tunnels? Well, a lot of that we don't know. But for now, you know, this could be an extended fight for all matters. And oil prices, unfortunately, could stay higher for longer. So that's the bad news there. Overnight, oil skyrocketed to be at a reach overnight peak of $115 a barrel. As of last week, it was 70, right? So literally, it just went up by 16% overnight. So that means your gas stations are likely to, you know, bring it up to $4 gallon of gas again that we haven't seen since pre-COVID, right? But it's kind of a weird reality that we're in. But again, I don't have too much insight into what our firm's views are at this point, into what the next steps are and where this is going to alter our economic, you know, outlooks. But going into this year, we did have a pretty positive outlook. for the U.S. economy, you know, as a whole, despite all the shutdowns, despite all the, you know, government stalemates, we are seeing incredible improvements out of our own domestic economy. So having a strong kind of a backbone going into this does help us to say, hey, you know, don't sweat it yet. But today's numbers on the labor market wasn't thrilling for us. So we're just taking this one day at a time before we make a house view or house call on what we see this economy is going to do for latter half of 2026.
What about metals for a safe place to go to?
Yeah, so it's, you know, we've been asked that a lot. And interestingly enough, our firm just has an academic view on asset allocation. So precious metals like gold or silver, they're more like a speculative commodity. And what happens with anything that's speculative, anything that's commodity, is largely driven by politics. And interestingly enough, right, gold is known to be a kind of a safe haven. A lot of people buy gold when the world goes down. So stock market goes up, typically gold, you know, gold goes the other way, right? But over the last couple of years, stock's gone up, gold's gone up. So the hedge hasn't really been a hedge. And over the last month, when the stock market's falling, gold and silver's falling, right? So it's been interesting to see where this whole commodity era is in. At the same time, right, people are competing gold with Bitcoins and cryptocurrencies. So it's playing a unique, you know, different flavor than what we've learned in school about gold. But nonetheless, anything that's deemed, academically a commodity or speculative, our firm just do not recommend those assets. Unfortunately, gold falls in that bucket as well.
Too hot to handle.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot to unfoil out of what's happening. But great question. I think individually, right, it's a great hedge. But as a hedge, remember, you have to put on and take off. So there's definitely two decisions to put in that consideration. But as a long view investor, gold just is hard for us to find a spot for you know, anything that's precious metals and related. So I guess, you know, for now, maybe I'll just conclude here to say you had a great fourth quarter. I'm hoping that some of the volatility subsides before the month end. But in theory, I don't have the final numbers for how your plan looks, but in theory, you should have a relatively better report than the benchmark, but that's to be determined. But again, you close out a strong fiscal year. You needed, obviously, another one to offset, you know, the pain from 2022. So keep our fingers crossed that everything will turn around shortly. Any other questions?
Thank you,
absolutely. Training. Thank you, guys.
Next up, we have Bonnie, our board attorney.
All right. So, I have a couple of memos for you. One is about just the IRS mileage reimbursement rate has gone up to 72.5 cents. So if you do any traveling on behalf of the board, you can seek reimbursement at that rate. The other memo is just a reminder that there is a requirement that if you have a web page, you all have to have information that's on it. You have to have specific information that's available to the public. Harkening back to our education, they want to make sure that there's a level of transparency. Simultaneously, the city has the same responsibilities to make this information available, whether they have it specifically on their webpage or whether they have links to the plan's webpage. You all don't have a webpage, at least one that's not, it's not publicly available. And so, you don't post all of these documents. You may have them available to you, but it's behind a password. So the city needs to make sure that it is posting these documents. The statute indicates that they should post it where the budgetary information is. So it's the actuarial evaluation, which you just got today. It's another report that is tied to the actuarial evaluation. So it's the pension transparency provision. And so it's the actuarial information, but just presented in a different way. It's called the 112-664 compliance report. And that's due 60 days after today, you approving the actuarial valuation. So that document will then be available. The third thing that's related to the actuarial valuation is a link. The state statute, the State Division of Retirement creates a one-page document of your actuarial valuation, and they ask that you have a link to that document that's available on the webpage. The other two items that you need to post are your actual expenses of the pension plan over the year. You can do that through the audit. You can do that through the state's ACFR, the city's ACFR, or you can just do, you know, just kind of a one page report of it. And the last item is what's called the 60T disclosure, and it is a comparison of 5 years worth of actual returns versus your assumed rate of return, and Frank and BCA can help you in getting that information. So, you know, we just need to make sure that we coordinate with the city to make sure that they are posting that information on the website. I haven't seen any kind of punishment for not having it out there, right? There's not consequences, but it is a required disclosure. And so, you know, I just wanted to make sure that everybody was on the same page about that information. You know, one of the things is a legislative update. There's not a lot of legislative things that are going on with regard to pensions. The only pension item that I'm aware of is a change to the cancer presumption for firefighters. And that just makes, there's a treatment for purposes, there's a state statutory requirement that cities offer to police officers and firefighters a line of duty death benefit based on how their death occurred in the line of duty. The cancer presumption treats death from cancer in line of duty and makes that amount available to them. And so what this change does is extends the period for which they can claim that state statutory benefit up to 1 year after they terminate service. So if they die within 1 year of terminating service, they're entitled to. It's a $75,000 benefit to the family. I think, you know, the other legislative thing that's happening is the property taxes issue. There was, you know, a piece of legislation that was approved by the House. I looked this morning and don't see that it is in what's called messages going back and forth between the House and the Senate. So I'm not sure what's happening because the legislative session is over by Friday. I did have a mayor in a city on the west side of the state tell me that he didn't think they were going to do anything during the legislative session, that they, you know, if they get to it, it's likely going to be in the special session. So. But, you know, that puts them up against time frames to get it on the ballot. So who knows? It is really like sausage this time, right? Like nobody really knows what's happening. And we'll see the end product, I guess, at the end of all the sessions. And then the last item is security monitoring firms. If you remember at the last meeting, Doug Borths came and made a presentation on behalf of Wolf Popper. I think we got the documents, the retainer agreements and everything from Doug to sign. And, you know, I had talked to you about that there are other companies out there. But what I brought you today is really just a policy around the securities litigation. I think it's important to know how you're impacted by this relationship. So We've put together a policy that really describes the roles of all of the parties that are part of this. So, we want to make sure that you all are acting in accordance with your fiduciary responsibilities. And, you know, the claims that arise out of losses on securities affect your assets. And so, you know, you want to make sure that you're protecting them. I think, you know, one of the big things that class action litigation does is it sends a message to companies that you're not going to sit idly by if they're taking actions which are fraudulent or representing to the market that they're not doing what they actually are doing behind the scenes. If they're lying, you know, if they're lying to you, lying liars who lie, you're going to take action. You're not going to just sit there and let your assets decline. So you can participate in these class actions on basically four different levels. The first one is the most common, right? You just sit by passively. You are not the lead plaintiff. You're not taking any action in the case. If there's a recovery, your custodian will file for you to get the money that you're entitled to from that case. And then that's just added to your portfolio. You can participate in as a class member in a class action. So you help somebody else bring a case against a company. You're not the lead plaintiff. You just participate in it in an active way. You can become a lead plaintiff. You can actually bring the case. You most likely would be in the circumstance where you brought a case as what's called a derivative action, where you stand in the shoes of the Board of Trustees. So any stockholder can bring those kinds of actions. You would perhaps need to be the first person to file the litigation, but you don't have to have the most money at stake. If you have a class based on fraud, if you have a class that's based on, you know, kind of really the actual misstatements to the market, you have to have the most loss. I think you would not be in the circumstance based on your assets of having the most loss in any particular stock kind of case in that way. So you might help somebody, you know, if one of your managers makes a particular market in something, you might help another bigger fund to reach a goal of having the most money or the most losses in the case. The last one is separate litigation. I've never personally participated in separate litigation that any of my clients have ever taken. I think that's an unusual step, and there would have to be a real story behind how you purchased your stock in order for you to be able to do that. But, you know, that is something that's available, particularly if you object to the way that the case is proceeding. So the rest of it just talks about, you know, what kinds of cases you would pursue. You know, one of the things that we indicate in here is that you would have a loss of $100,000 in the particular holding. I mean, to make it a worthwhile scenario, you know, you don't want to bring litigation over $1.25, right? You want to make sure that that the time and energy that you and the service providers are putting into the case, you know, reaches a level of materiality for purposes of your pension fund. So the roles and authorities. So the board's role is that, you know, you all will review the securities cases. You will review this policy periodically. You will modify protocols for implementation of this policy. You know, if you see that, you know, the cases that you're given that are at $100,000 level maybe are not significant enough for your purposes to become involved, and you may want to increase that amount. You would select the securities action monitoring firm. So you did select a firm to terminate agreements with service providers responsible for implementing the policy, and that you would ratify all actions taken by the chair and the board counsel between meetings. Sometimes bringing a case, and that moves on to the next one, the chair role and authority. Sometimes bringing these cases means that a decision needs to be made quickly. And so this policy would give the chair the authority to go forward to bring the action subject to ratification by you all as the Board of Trustees at the next meeting. So, you know, this actually might be a place where, you know, you all were indicated, you know, we're thinking about the chair has authorized filing of this lawsuit. And then you all could say, hey, I want to have a special meeting about that. And so, you know, we would delay having it until we had the special meeting. If we don't hear from any of you, then it would go forward and we'd bring it back for ratification at the meetings. The litigation council is aware of that scenario that, you know, the chairman cannot act alone in these cases. You know, it is subject to ratification. And I have had to pull back litigation that was approved by the chair, you know, but the board wasn't interested in going forward with it. So, you know, again, they are aware that that can happen. And some of the settlement discussions would require, you know, kind of board chair action before a board meeting so that it can go forward. So there's often mediation. You know, there's telephone calls about amounts. I mean, in general, we rely on the litigation counsel to give us direction as to whether we feel like, you know, this case is worth X number of dollars. And so, you know, the settlement is $85 million, and you're like, oh, that's great. But they think they can get 100 and a quarter. And so, you know, we kind of follow just their direction about where to proceed in the course of the settlement. I mean, they've got experts that come in and value your stock and look at the market and make all of these particular calculations, kind of like the actuary, you know. And so we do rely on their guidance in that particular scenario. The board general counsel. So we review all of the filings that are done by your litigation counsel. You know, we look and have input into the documents that they are filing. You know, we keep track of the discovery. I've got a case currently going on, and the litigation attorneys are in California. So sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and there are, you know, 15 different emails about the discovery that's going on back and forth, because these cases tend to have a lot of counsel in them. So it's really interesting. It feels like, you know, they're 24-hour lawyers. But, you know, because they're 4 hours behind. When they work extra, it's my 2 o'clock in the morning, right? The custodian's role. So the custodian is responsible for making the filings in your class action cases. And we want to make sure that on a regular and ongoing basis, they are following these cases to make sure that you're getting your recovery. I saw a presentation by litigation counsel that there is $1 billion that's not claimed annually in these cases that's available to stockholders, and just people are just not filing and leaving, you know, $1 billion on the table, which is just so interesting to me. Like, I feel like somebody should make a business in that. So we want to make sure that your custodian is filing and claiming the amount of money that you're due. The monitoring firm, you know, obviously will be monitoring your portfolio. So, you know, they'll be following a case. They'll see a significant stock drop, and the first thing that they do is to go and check. Why is this happening? Is it something bad? Is it something that's changed in their company? We have a case right now against Krispy Kreme. Krispy Kreme entered into a relationship with McDonald's. They were going to deliver out donuts every morning to all the McDonald's across the country. And it was touted as, this is going to be great because we're going to get all this exposure to people coming in for a cup of coffee in the morning. They can get a Krispy Kreme donut, fresh and ready. Well, they had terrible problems with implementing that and actually having enough people to get the donuts freshly to the McDonald's. And, you know, they were telling the market, they were telling the people who invested on their investor calls, hey, this is, we're ready, we're going to make it work. Well, it didn't work. It didn't work. So we have a piece of litigation about the misrepresentation that they knew in the background that they weren't ready, that they didn't have enough people to drive the trucks to get the fresh donuts. And sometimes the donuts were 2 days old by the time they got there. Who wants a 2 day old Krispy Kreme, right? You want them hot and ready, right? So anyway, so they look at those cases and they see, okay, well, who bought this and how much did they lose as a result of this misrepresentation? So they'll bring that information to you. You all decide whether you want to have them represent you in that particular case. And frankly, they can tell you there's a case and you can pick somebody else to represent you in that particular case. You don't have to take them on as the counsel. The rest of it is just a summary of the things that I already talked to you about, but just, you know, kind of just short and helping you to make decisions. So again, the size of the damages that you would consider when you're deciding whether you're going to take a case, the strength of those claims, you know, how much investigation they've done. They get experts. So actually in the Krispy Kreme case, which, because I just read all the documentation, you know, they had spoken with people who used to work at McDonald's. They had people who used to work at Krispy Kreme who, you know, had kind of inside information about all the things that were going on. So they were going to be able to bring them in as witnesses in that particular case. So, you know, you want to look to see, do they have people who have actual knowledge of the fact that they knew all of these things were bad, but they were telling people, no, it's going to be great. It's going to be a great rollout. So, you know, you want to understand the venue. There are some courts that are better for these kinds of cases than others across the country. You want to make sure that the lawyers have significant resources available to pay for the litigation, because they have to front the money for these cases, sometimes for years. I have a case now that's been out there for like 10 years, and it's just settling now. And so they have to be able to pay all the people to do this work. So you want to make sure when you're choosing that you have those people who can fund it. And I think that's one of the reasons why you should consider having more than one. So you have you know, a variety of deep pockets. They are, by the way, very collegial, and they're very willing to work with one another in these kinds of cases. So, you know, joining up if they've got a plaintiff and you all are considered a plaintiff, then, you know, putting them together to have more money, more losses in a particular case. So this is a policy that we recommend that you all have in place now, so that if, you know, if a case comes before you,
I have a question. When he made his presentation at the last meeting, we were talking about having additional firms. I don't know. I think maybe Troy, you were looking in, going to look into seeing. Somebody was going to. Right.
You didn't really talk about your role, so I want to that. I do have like 6 or 8 firms that we work with on a regular and ongoing basis. And so I can give you their marketing material. We can have people come to make a presentation to you. You know, that's kind of your outlet, what your style is.
So this plan that you brought to us today isn't necessarily to sign up with that company. It's just to have a plan in place so when we do sign up for a company, she knows what we're looking for.
Yeah, so we're done on that.
Right. But if we add more, this policy is for all.
This is the policy of the board.
Okay.
Thank you.
of them? And how many did you recommend previously?
Two to three, right, was what was discussed previously.
As far as determining which two to three to choose from, I think having the material, I don't know that we need all of them.
I was going to say if we had them a material and then...
Send us the material and then we can maybe narrow it down at the next meeting.
Yeah.
For them to then come give our presentation or just narrow it down from the paperwork.
I mean, maybe if we, you know, rank them, each one of us ranks them and then we can compare notes. Or send them to Troy.
I can, I mean, if she sends it out to you before the next meeting, I could put on the agenda for discussion.
Yeah.
And at that point, you can decide to call, you know, them in on the next meeting or make a decision at that meeting.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay. So I'll put it down. Bonnie, if you get that to me, I can send it to them or whatever. And then this way, you'll have it, have time, and I can put on the next agenda.
And then considering we just got this today, do we want to just put it on the next agenda?
Right.
That gives everybody a chance to peruse it and digest it. And all right. Thank you, Bonnie. All right. Item number 5, new business. Being none, we move to item number 6, old business. Anybody have any old business? There's none on the agenda. Item number 7, consent agenda. There's no payment ratifications. There is a new invoices for payment approval warrant number 101, which I believe is on the tablet.
Yep, page 88. It's actually starting. It starts at 89. The summary is 88. And then I do have that for signature in front of you. Okay. We couldn't get everything paid before the meeting, so that's why we had.
And then the fund activity report for December 2nd through March 2nd, 2026. Are there any questions concerning the consent agenda?
I don't have any.
We'll look for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I make a motion we pay the bills.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0. And item number 8, staff reports. Mr. Troy?
I don't really have anything. I think we covered it all.
Okay.
You got your training in. That's usually what is under my staff report. You already did that, so we're good for a year. So I'll document that in the meeting minutes, that training was covered for an hour and the topics, that, you know, general topics were covered. And good.
Sounds good. Thank you. Item number 9, trustee reports. Does anybody have anything good for the order?
Nope.
All right. We will adjourn then at 11:03. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
You too.